Okay, so the book of Iyov is about a man who suffers for sins that he never committed. He says that he can deal with this, what he can't deal with is the fact that his friends are so sure that he deserves his suffering. And he suffers because of two bets that God had with the Satan. Right? So Iyov knows he didn't suffer. He's not sick. He doesn't deserve his suffering. More important, the reader knows that. Right? Most of the book is about how three of his friends come to visit him, originally to console him, but afterwards to berate him for suggesting that God punished him more than he deserved. If you're being punished, you deserve it. Don't be more righteous than God. Take it on the chin. Don't claim that God punishes without cause. So Iyov keeps saying, "I can live with the fact that I am suffering this much. It's children, it's suffering, tense physical pain, but I can't live with the fact that my friends are so sure they know me better than I know." So as the book wears on, the friends are very like frum, very righteous about God's ways. And Iyov indeed does question some of God's omniscience, omnipotence, omnibenevolence, and omnipresence. Right? Those are the four omnis that Iyov deals with. And at one point of the book, Iyov says, "I just want my day in court. I deserve to face my accuser. Let God tell me once and for all what I did to deserve this kind of suffering." Okay? Chapter 40, God finally gives Iyov his day in court. He addresses him. Picks him up. Shows him the cosmos. Right? And he says not a single word. After talking to Iyov for two prakim, not a single word does he tell him about his own personal suffering or Iyov's own personal situation. All God does in these two chapters is to express to Iyov the immense chasm between man and God. There's the amoeba, Iyov, there's you, and I'm on the other side of the ocean. So if, you know, if you still have any questions after you've seen, if you've been exposed to some of the vastness of my being, right? So this is the
your sound is off.
No, Rabbi Schwartz, you're fine. It's other people who are talking in the background.
Okay. Everybody, give me a microphone.
Thank you. You can stay here, June, if you want. Okay. Okay, everyone, I'm back. So instead, God tells him for almost a whole chapter all about this Leviathan fish and what it's capable of doing and how it's essentially child's play for me. In fact, there's a pasuk just like that in Tehillim. Remember what it is? Leviathan zuyatzarto l'sachekbo. We say, because it's famous, because we say it's called Baruch Hinavshi. It's in chapter 104, which we say in Rosh Chodesh. So God created this Leviathan fish not so much to play with it like a little rubber ducky in a bathtub, but that it's sort of it's child's play. It'll be easy to conquer this thing once you have the know-how, which is what we're trying to do with the sukkah. By the way, anyone remember who wrote Iyov? Who's the author of Iyov? Which biblical prophet is the author of?
Yeah, it's a machlokas. Might have been Moshe, right?
Of when he lived, but every one of those nine opinions agrees that the author of the book is Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. And that this trip at the end of seeing the cosmos is really the discussion between Moshe and God of, let me see your face. And God says, no man can see my face and live. Right? If you really want to know is, basically, in the storyline, it's obvious what Moshe wants to know. How come you want to destroy these people for making a golden calf, When you asked me to get them money when we left Egypt, go back to Egypt because that's going to be important at the end, right? When we left Egypt, you asked me to get them gold and silver so that they would leave, wouldn't leave empty-handed, and you promised Abraham they would leave Berhush Gadol. You knew what they were going to do with that gold. So why did you ask me to get it for them to make a calf out of it, and now you want to destroy? What is this, God? How are you running this show? Right? Moshe's not shy about challenging them. Right? Which is what Eob does. And at the end, God tells him about this amazing fish. Right? And at the end of that chapter, he says, when he's describing this fish, there's all kinds of imagery of sukkahs in this chapter. Right? You see, Timshof, Leviathan, Bachukah, Bachevel, Tashkiel, the Shono. Right, the Simagmon, the Apo, and you know what? It's the pasuk right before this that says you trap the Leviathan in your sukkah. And it's this fascinating imagery, but it's obvious. This thing lurks in the water, right? Sukkah is all about water. The libations every other day of the year is wine. The libations on sukkah is water, in addition to wine. Right, on Sukkot is the rainy season. Right, we're going to see something about this water, hidden Leviathan, Yetzirah, things that are hidden from us, trying to identify things. It's all going to come in a nice neat package. And so we started with source number one, this Haftorah of Shemot. But by the way, can you try to imagine? Why would the Haftorah of Shemot be a place where we speak of God finally destroying this Leviathan fish that lurks in the water?
In Egypt, God is now taking care of Egypt. That's been such
And especially because Egypt has always prided itself. Its arrogance was its water. Was its body of water. Okay. Something that Israel is not blessed with. Yeah, there's a Mediterranean here, and there's some Galilee water there, and there's a Jordan, and we certainly have Eretz Nachle Mayim, right? But we need to get our sustenance from up there. Okay, so anything that has to do with water is fair game for this year tonight, which is why Moshe lost an immense teaching opportunity when the people thirsted in the desert in the 40th year after his sister died. It's an immense teachable moment. He could have taught them, listen guys, you're thirsty. Let me tell you what we do when we're thirsty. We pray to God to send us rain. Because in the desert, we got our water by taking it in Egypt.
I went to shul and I told them.
From the...
Yeah.
I call you Jude.
Rabbi had the sound.
I'm not muted.
Sure, I said, Rabbi.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay, everyone. Okay, so. Yes, so when Moshe lost this immense opportunity to teach the people, what do you do when you're thirsty? We're about to enter a land where we don't get water following us in a well, like we, you know, what's the Lashon in Dvarim? You could just move your feet and move the water you need from the Nile from one tributary to another, right? So it's not going to work for you when you get to Israel because you don't have that kind of water. All right, you've got to look up to Shemayim for your water. So Moshe, take the stick that you hit with which you hit a rock in the first year in the desert, back in Parshas Bishalom. Right, take the stick. It's not a setup. If God didn't tell him to take the stick, he never would have hit the rock. Take the stick and talk to the rock. You use your mouth when you're thirsty to pray. So it's a direct correlation of failing to teach that message that they didn't get to go into the land, where you have this new revelation of God, so to say, where you don't get your water like you did in the Nile and here in the desert. You get your water by praying, you know, there will be inevitable droughts. So the two places in Tehillim, one is what Ariel just mentioned, which is source number 6. Okay, Leviathan Zuya Tzarki L'Sachek Bo, sort of like child's play. But if I may connect this one step further, there is a pasuk in Sefer Zechariah. It's going to be an important wrap-up, source number 5. Sefer Zechariah talks at the end of his book about, I shouldn't say the end, it's chapter 8. He says something amazing is going to happen when the Jews return to the land. It'll be so amazing that it'll be hayipolei be'enei Hashem. It will be amazing even to God. So the Gemara in Sukkah says, what can possibly be amazing to God? God knows all things. Isn't there a pasuk hayipolei me'Hashem davar? Nothing is amazing to God. God has seen everything. So what could be amazing to God? What would that be? So the Gemara in Sukkah, a lot of this is all in the Sefer Sukkah. So Gemara at the end of Sukkah, Daf Nun Beis, says, the shchitas yetzer hara. That when we're able to go like back to Gan Eden, to a pre-sin place, a pre-sin state, where everything is so innocent, like a newborn baby, like everything is, but in the mind of an adult, the body of an adult, everything is so perfect and so, you find the lost article, there's never even a moment's thought that you might be able to keep that thing, because you always want to do the right thing. That's called the Shechitas Yetzer, which is none other than what we're saying here, the destruction of this sea creature. Right? Which is why the, not just in Kabbalah, but in some mainstream sources, that's what we mean when we say we want to sit in the sukkah that is made from the skins of this animal. Right? Because the defeat of this animal is the which God says at that time will be child's play. It's just a question of us getting used to it. Right? In other words, put down some lobster over there. And for me to not eat it is not a big test of my fortitude. Right? Some other things are a test to my, but some things I've trained myself for so long that there's no question about this. I know I'm going to do what the Torah expects me to do in this thing. I've trained myself. But that doesn't work with everything. Right? Some things we have to work a little harder than others. Right? That's this Shechitas Yetzer Hara. Because once you know the diagnosis, you know which pill to take, you know what the medication is, right? So we're well on our way of getting there once we identify that thing. Okay, so that is we just did the child's play of source number 6. Source number 3, I'm sorry, is also in Sefer Tehillim. Source number 3, you recognize what I underlined? It says, right? This is in the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur liturgy, right? And especially Yom Kippur, the Slichas liturgy, right? When we speak on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur of coming out victorious on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, there's a lot of psukim we speak about doing so. But of all the things that it's included is this defeat of the Leviathan and eating it. We'll have our way with it. Right? These psukim here in chapter 6, 74 of Tehillim. Okay, does it sound familiar? Can you use the Lashon? Does the Hebrew sound familiar? We just got finished saying this numerous times over the last 2 weeks.
It's a metaphor for overcoming the years of Iraq.
All right.
So by having it as the walls of the sukkah, it's having the Israelites present before, but it's not affecting us. You can feast of the flesh of this present evil, but we're not unaffected by it.
I mean, right, yeah, exactly. Now, if you want it, you may want to ask, so why not say, I'm looking forward to a time where I can make a pair of tzitzis from the skins of the Leviathan. I can make the straps of my tefillin from the skins of the Leviathan. Let me make a care around my roof from the skins. Why of all things the sukkah? Okay, well, I don't believe we have answered that question yet. But if I wanted to just say it's like a Xeris HaKosov, the answer is in source number 7. At the end of God's long speech to Eov, right, where Eov finally gets his day in court, right, God explains to him, without actually answering any of his particular questions, right? Remember, I told God, give me my day in court and tell me why I suffered this way. And God essentially tells him, no man can see me and live, Eov. I'm sorry. Come on. Eov, you're Moshe. You're not Eov, you're Moshe. You're writing this book, Moshe. You know this already, right? So let me show you around the cosmos. Let me show you what my job is like. And see if you still have a question. But in the end of God telling that to Eov, he speaks about stripping the skins from this Leviathan and putting it into a sukkah. So that is enough an explanation of why, if the defeat of this Leviathan fish is tantamount to us getting in control of our desires, right? Why does that manifest itself in sukkah more than any other mitzvah? All right, so you can say it's right here. It's in Eov. But I want to go the next step. Which, by the way, if you're really getting into the lumbus of this, why the Masechta Chas, that has the by far and away the key sukkah in all of Shas on the Yetzirah, and how the Yetzirah works, is sukkah dafkan based in you. Right? When the Masechtas do that, it means it's connected. There's a connection between sukkahs coming right after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, where I'm starting anew. Right? Then let's see how long these resolutions last. Let's see how this is going to work. And it's meant to give us a victory lap. Like I said, Hoshana is like a victory lap. You're holding up your lulav, it's like a sword. You know, remember one of the knights of Sukkot, I explained that the insignias of the IDF look like lulav and an esrog, right? So it's the Netziv explains this way, that it's a victory lap to go from the successful Rosh Yom Kippur to continue with our SBR. Okay, so now it says afterwards, L'cho yom af l'cho layla, atach kinosim ha'or v'shamash. That's an interesting continuation of all this. The day is yours, the night is yours. What is that? The day is yours, the night is yours, God. So on this, I would like to take you to source number 2. I know I'm skipping around back and forth, but this is an amazing kliyakar that I found on the pasuk, v'yi erev v'yi boker yom echol. Right, it's already next week. Shabbos next is going to be reading this. What's the parshanut? Rashi says the seder halashona haminyan. It should be vayera vayboker yom rishon. Sheni yom shlishi. What's his vayera yom echad? So Rashi says maybe this is an anti-Christian polemic because Christianity teaches that there's a Trinity in this creation story. It says naaseh odom. But Rashi says, Vayera Vayboker Yom Echad, there's only one God creating the world. Okay? Now, I'm not sure that Rashi was meant for this commentary. It's from Bereishis Rabbah, so I'm not sure if it was meant to be against Christianity, but I do think more likely, at least the way the Kliyokar explains it, that it was meant to be a polemic against Zoroastrianism. You know what I mean by that? Zoroastrians had two gods. Good God, Mazda, and the bad God, Hormuz. So these two gods are all strengthened by the actions of man. And it's not so far from what the Gemara tells us. You know, when we're acting well towards each other, we strengthen God. God is like our shadow, Hashem Tzilcha. Right? We make God strong by our good actions. Conversely, Nebuch, we make God appear weak by allowing the enemy to overcome us if we're acting immorally. You get it? But they really do believe that there are two separate beings, and that they have a much easier way of explaining the evil. That's the opposite. Right? That's Hormuz. Okay? The Kliyokar seems to say that he's not like Rashi, but I think he's point on like Rashi. This is the message Rashi was giving. But he Erev. Erev means l'chol yom l'chol laila, right? Yeah, God, we know the day is yours. The day is clear. What do we call by yom? It's boker, right? Why is the morning called boker? What does boker mean in Hebrew? But bikur means the bikur cholim. It's bikur is daylight. It's levaker means to examine something that's clear. Boker is clear. It's clarity in the morning. What does erev mean? Mixed with murky. Yerbuvia, orob is a mixed multitude, right? Erev rav. Arev is to mix. Yerbuvia is a like a you know, Erev is called Erev because it's a mixture of day and night. Right? So as day turns to night, it turns to Erev and then it becomes light. Okay? A choshech karo light. So the Zoroastrians felt that the Yom belonged to Mazda, the Laila, the night, belonged to Hormuzd. And these are two different forces. So what is Rashi? What is the person? By Erev, by Hiboker, is Yom Echor. You know what I'm saying? The sources of both of these come from the same God. We still have a theodicy problem. God, how do you allow that kind of evil to proliferate? Right? So God doesn't get off the hook with this. Okay? But nonetheless, the point is made in our theodicy system, right? That it works from the same source. Okay? And that's why after Tehillim Ayin Dalet talks about the immense power of this Leviathan, but nonetheless God will subdue it, right? We say, God, to you is the day and to you is the night. We understand that this Leviathan is part of your creation, right? That Eov's suffering is part of your system, right? And therefore, for good measure, God goes to Eov's three friends and tells them, if Eov doesn't pray for you, the three of you are going to die, because you did not speak well of me the way Eov did. And you have to look at God and say, God, did you just read this book? Did you just read the last 37 chapters? Because these three friends were very religious. Their theodicy was very pure. They didn't even hold you responsible for anything. It was Eov who grabbed you by the throat like an Avraham and like a Habakkuk and like a Moshe and like a Hannah and like an Eliyahu and like a Yonah and like a Yehoshua and like a Gideon. And I can go on and on. Right? The three friends, they said, oh, okay, that's it. Okay, Auschwitz, everyone who went to Auschwitz, they must have been sinned. That's what they didn't say. Right? Can't put any blame at God. Right, so God is basically telling his friends that's just kissing up like that is not talking well. Right, just take the easy way out, just like that, it's not going to work. Okay, so at this point, plus source number four, we are Nebuch in a says Bayomahu Akim Esukas Gavet Hanofelis. It's not no fallus, it's no felis. Okay. In the benching, we should say, Harachaman Yokim Lanu Sukas Dabat Hano Felis. First of all, that's how it appears in the Pasuk. Second of all, it's only in Tanakh that segels become commences at the end of a statement. Ashivarmina Geshe. Anyway, so here it is the house of David, or the kingdom of David, the throne of David, the Kisei David, Malchus David, Beis David. Is called an Amos Sukkas David. The kingdom of David is called a Sukkah because, for obvious reasons, the Sukkah is a rye. It's not something that is that's set and etched in anything that's permanent, right? So what's interesting is that in all of Tanakh, the word Sukkah is always missing the vav. It's always a chuf right after the sun. All right, there's one place in Zillim where it says Sukko, but I'm not sure if the short point meant Eben Shoshan. It's not referring to a sukkah. It's just referring to a cover. The word sukkah is probably one of those Hebrew words. Right, there are fancy words for this. I'm just going to explain what it is. Where letters interpose. There's some obvious cases like Simla and Salma. Right. Keves and Kesev. Both mean a sheep. Right? Simla and Salma. Sin Lamed Mem or Sin Mem Lamed. Right? There are about 100 such words in Hebrew. And I think Sukkah is one of those words. Sukkah is a kisuf. It's a kisuri. It's a cover. And that's what it's called, a sukkah. Samach kafe is a kaf samach. Right? And a lot more words that affect this than you think. Alright, so in that day, Hashem says, I will take what will be nothing but a sukkah, and it's fallen, that's why it's a sukkah, very easy to fall, and I'm going to bring it back up. And that's what I have to wrap everything up now, source number 5. This will explain why, of all the things we consider the defeat of this Leviathan fish, in order to sit in a sukkah made from the skins of the Leviathan, right? So to answer the question, what will Mashiach sukkah look like? The answer is, it's going to be made, the walls will be made. The schach will be the same as our schach, right? Okay? The walls will be different stuff, okay? So, but it says in Zechariah, this is after the first day, so we just read it. All the nations that come to make their claim on Jerusalem, well before Zechariah, other prophets have spoken of the fact that numerous nations will consider Yerushalayim to be an object of desire for them. He basically kept saying, right? So they'll come on a regular basis to celebrate Sukkos. Huh? Why Davka Sukkos? This is, of course, why the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, when it says that the Goyim asked God for a mitzvah, right? They said, so we want reward like the Jews. At the end of the days, and God says, well, why should I give you reward? You didn't do mitzvahs like the Jews. And he goes, yeah, but you didn't give us mitzvahs. Right? So God says, well, I offered you mitzvahs. And God says, yeah, but you didn't coerce us, like coerce the Jews. Remember that Mendrash about the miracles they saw at the mountain over their heads? So he said, okay, fair enough, touche. I'll give you a mitzvah. Let's see how you do. Very, very famous story in the Talmud. So they got the mitzvah of sukkah, only it got very hot. And they're sitting in the sukkah, probably got a lot of flies, and probably got, the yellow jacks all over the honey, and and then they just probably get very comfortable in there, and then they not only left, they kicked it down, right? They left. Grody, you're allowed to leave the sukkah if it's very uncomfortable, but they were so upset that they couldn't do the mitzvah on their terms. We leave the sukkah because it's raining or it's hot or there's a terrible odor or whatever else, the other reason that we're fucked from sukkah, which is what we discussed last Wednesday. If we have to leave the sukkah because of any of these things, so we'll say, I'm sorry, I can't do the mitzvah on God's terms. He's the one, after all, who made it hot. He's the one who made it rain. Right? The Gemara likens sitting in the sukkah when it's raining to serving your master with a cup. The master throws it in your face, and then you give him another. Who would do such a thing? It's clear that he doesn't want your service. All right? So if it's raining, God is saying, listen, basically you can say, you don't have to sit in the sukkah. No, what God is saying is, I don't want you to sit in the sukkah, right? Okay, so God makes it rain for all kinds of reasons, right? So here it's saying the nations will all come to celebrate sukkahs. And then, you know what? The nations that don't come to Jerusalem to celebrate Sukkot, they're not going to get this rain. Look where we're closing where we started. V'mishpachas Mitzrayim, lo sa'aleh, lo ba'ar. The Egyptians, why does God pick on the Egyptians of all the nations? To the Nile, of course. Because the Haftorah, the week after, the Haftorah for Aram, right? The Haftorah, the week right after Shmos, is about Cairo saying, I have created the Nile, I am God, I created all the waters. Right? Egyptians were phenomenally arrogant about their resources. Right? So God says it's much better to live in a place where you have to look up there for your sustenance, not down here. Some say that that's what we do when we take the Arvei Nachal. When we beat the ground with it on the Shana Rabbi, you know what I'm talking about, right? So basically that's what we're doing, right? We're hitting the ground, not because I'm angry with the ground, but I'm acknowledging, it might be a delivery of paper, I'm acknowledging that I live in a land where the ground does not supply me with this much needed wood, which is a good thing. Which is the message that Moshe could have delivered in the desert when they thirsted, which is, listen guys, you're going to a great place right now. You're going to a place where the Tar HaShamayim Tishtemayim. That is something that's, you know, people who need God are the luckiest people. They just think how fortunate you are that you don't have to, you say the Nile is very reliable, right? But God is even more reliable. Because he knows when to shut off the water when necessary, in order to get you guys to gather together and pray and learn Maseches Tainis. Right? Okay? So that's basically how all this wraps up with Zechariah. It's really crucial to see all the Pesukim together, the day, the night, good, bad, how everything fits in. We don't see it clearly. We can't. Moshe couldn't see it clear and live. So we certainly won't, right? But we can read the books. We can read the book that Moshe wrote, the book of Eov, about his own suffering. And the end of that book is extremely critical to understanding why the Sukkah of Mashiach is going to be made with this Mikyotan, which is, again, in source number 7, the linchpin of all this, where Eov says, God is going to smash this Leviathan, original picture we started with, Yishayahu, right? But not Torah Shmos. And God is going to finally smash this Leviathan fish, and then the Yitzhahara will be child's clay, and the Sachik clay. Everything will be, and it'll be amazing. Why now we have to close with that? Why is that amazing to God? Because I call Bidei Shemayim, puts me here as Shemayim. Because free will is in our hands. So if God predetermines what we're going to do, and we don't have any choice in the matter, then of course that's not amazing to God. But what's amazing to God is that, you know, is that the we'll be able to once and for all defeat this thing that lurks in the water that we can't see. Again, you know why it doesn't lurk on land? Because then someone would see it. This is not something seen with sense data. You know what I'm saying? Right? So if it doesn't look in the air, it doesn't look in the land, it looks in the water. Right? It's a sea creature, and that's how Egypt fits into this with the Nile and how the rainy season of Sukkot fits. Okay, everyone, so when you get to see the Leviathan Sukkot, you know you're with Mashiach. Okay, everybody, all the very best to you, Kol Tov. I hope everyone is able to plug in. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.